is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Well, we get a chance to talk a little NFL draft now with somebody who handles the draft for a living for CBS Sports. He's doing mock drafts, analyst, analyzing everything that's going to. He's going to tell us exactly what the Seahawks are going to do at every moment of this draft. He's going to join us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is Ryan Wilson. Ryan, how are you, man?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How's it going?
It's going great. So you know exactly what's going to happen with each and every pick. That's why we called you. And we're trying to figure out what the Seahawks. Seahawks have three picks, a total of three picks, a second, a fourth, and a seventh. Going into this, first of all, do you expect, based on their history, that they'll just stick with three? Because out here, that just doesn't sound like anything they would ever do. But it's a different kind of offseason with college football, different draft. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I don't know what's going to happen, just so we're clear, so people don't hold it against me in 3 weeks. When it doesn't work out exactly as planned, they won't point to this conversation as proof as to why I defrauded them. But yeah, you're right. So historically, we've seen, especially in the John Schneider, Pete Carroll era, they like to move around, usually move down and accumulate picks, and maybe that's a possibility here. But as you note, I mean, Jamal Adams was their first-round pick, so to speak, so that's going to the Jets, and they don't pick until 56. I suppose they could move down from there, but at some point, you start wanting to addressing these needs. And excuse me, we know that Russ Wilson made it clear in various ways early in the offseason that, you know, he wants to have some say in personnel issues, and he wants to be better protected, and that's certainly a fair point for a franchise quarterback. They traded for Gabe Jackson. They re-signed Ethan Poacher, so they have some pieces there. So offensive line could certainly be in need in the second round. They could also go defensive line. Jerron Reed, obviously, is now elsewhere. He's in Kansas City. So there are some needs there as well to get that defense back to what it was 3 or 4 years ago. So there are certainly places to start in terms of targeting positions. But this is also a pretty good football team. I feel like it's not a situation where they're 10 players away. This is a situation where they're a handful of players away. The issue is, as we sort of pointed out here, they don't have a lot in terms of draft capital to make something happen this year without potentially moving down. But again, you don't have a lot to move down with, or trading away future draft picks, which I'm sure they're not eager to do.
Ryan, I'm glad you said that. We've gotten kind of spoiled here in Seattle, but it's a pretty good football team here that they have already. So, but you've been doing this for about a decade. How much more difficult was it for you this year? I mean, you had no combine. You had some guys not playing. I think there's some opt-out players in the first round. How much harder was it this year doing what you do?
So for me, in terms of the college football season, that was unchanged. In terms of watching these guys on film, that was unchanged. But it did change for me. We didn't go to the Senior Bowl this year. CBS didn't. It was travel restrictions. So that's a huge issue, because you can not only talk to the scouts and the personnel folks who are there, but you can also get a look at the players up close. And it's probably the last chance to really talk to these players one-on-one in what feels like more of a college atmosphere, because from that point on, starting with the combine, it feels very much like NFL. These are now professional athletes. They are sort of handled that way with the PR folks that are around them. But again, there was no combine that we're typically used to seeing. And in years past, CBS would have a set, and we would just bring in 50 of the top players, and you would get a chance to talk to them for 10 minutes at a time. And that was invaluable to me, to not only see the guys up close and personal, but to talk to them and ask them specific questions that I wasn't able to do this year. So that part I missed, but I think it's actually tougher on the NFL teams than it is on the media, only because they weren't allowed on campus for the most part. They weren't allowed to talk to a lot of the people they would talk to in terms of their on-campus resources about the player, whether it was other teammates, whether it was coaches, whether it was other administrative staff. And that, to me, makes it potentially more difficult. You're still going on the tape, but you don't have sort of the off-field stuff that you like to check those boxes on. So I think the teams would probably tell you it was a little tougher on them in terms of the off-the-field evaluations, in terms of, you know, is this guy a good person? Is he a great teammate? That type of stuff. Whereas the on-field, the tape stuff, I think that was not really a huge issue. But you want to find out about these players, and that's certainly much tougher to do what we went through the last 12 months.
Well, and it seems like it kind of falls into the hands, or, you know, falls into a good place for the Seahawks. This is the year probably when you don't want to be draft heavy. I would think anyway. I mean, I as far as we always talk about the crapshoot that the draft is in a lot of cases, but you know, with even more of these variables, and like you said, you know, getting to know a player and a guy, what kind of guy he is, that means everything. So, you know, the limited amount of that, maybe it's a good year for the Seahawks to only have three picks.
Yeah, no, that's one way to look at it for sure, because sometimes, you know, you don't have, in this instance, you don't have all the information. On the other hand, it may make it easier to draft these guys without overanalyzing them.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes, and I've talked to teams before, and, you know, after the whole process, I've said to them, so are you guys, you ever find yourself in a room and people are just overselling or overanalyzing something that should be simple? And the responses I've gotten from scouts is all the time this happens. This happens all the time. It's not just, you know, us and the media and fans that overanalyze every single thing. We have that in the draft room too. So that could be one of the things you miss out this time on in a good way, because there's not all the extra stuff to get hung up on. But, you know, at the end of the day, your job as an NFL team is to find these players. So every team has to do that. The Seahawks have three picks. So they have to hit on these three picks. I mean, obviously that's the plan going in. It becomes incredibly tough when the 31 other teams are also selecting the same players you like. But if the Seahawks are looking to get someone in round two at 56 there's going to be some good players. And they can get players that can help them immediately. And that's their primary focus. Obviously that, and then the fourth round pick. The seventh round pick, you talk about crapshoot. That's the crappiest of crapshoots, if you will. But the second and fourth rounders, you want to get guys that can come in on some level and play right away or help you in special teams early on.
Well, I think you make a great point about the overanalysis, because that's the thing. I mean, I think people will sit and talk themselves out of picks and things like that. So.
Hey, right.
The name you have attached to the Seahawks with that 56th overall pick, Davion Nixon, defensive lineman out of Iowa. What is it about him that makes you think the Seahawks would be looking at that? Because we look at it and go, well, boy, they could use a center. There's cornerback depth is not good at all. And then you've got him going with a defensive lineman. What makes him the pick for you in your mind?
Yeah, and those positions you mentioned are all obviously on the table. And full disclosure, I do a mock draft every week, so I haven't had a lot of opportunities to do mock drafts for the Seahawks, because until the last month or so, I've only been doing one round mock drafts. So these last recent ones have been two and three rounders. So there's been some variation there. And right, I haven't taken Devion Nixon, who I like a lot. He's incredibly athletic, incredibly active on the inside. He's a better pass rusher than run stopper right now, but I think he's going to get better as he turns into that role and just give you a little juice on the inside. I mean, you talk about needs at cornerback, and those are legit. But if you can get to the quarterback with your front four or your front seven, that takes a little pressure off the secondary. I looked at a previous mock draft I did 2 weeks ago. I had them taking Alex Leatherwood in the second round. So he's a tackle for the Alabama Crimson Tide now, but there's an opportunity for him to kick inside. He may be a guard at some point. And you mentioned centers. There'll be some centers in the fourth round that can come in and help. There'll be some there in the second round for sure. I don't know if you want to draft any in the second round. That might be a tad high. But round four, there will be some guys there. And cornerback, you can get round two or round four if that's the route you also decide to go. There are going to be some good players. This cornerback class is surprisingly deep. It's probably one of the deepest positions in this whole draft. So there will be positions to choose from in terms of what the Seahawks need. It's just a matter of where they decide to go based on what happens in front of them.
Hey, Ryan, I'm just, I don't know if the word's excited, but I mean, it certainly is a mystery. Maybe not to you, though. The third pick with the Niners moving up, and Bob was pointing this out that, you know, why didn't you – I mean, you could have probably got him fourth, fifth, sixth, because you've got Atlanta, Cincinnati, Miami. They don't need quarterbacks. You're pretty convinced that it's Mac Jones for sure, because that was a pretty radical move that they made. Moving up to
radical
get to number
is,
three.
Radical is the PG term to describe it for sure. Because it was surprising, absolutely surprising, to go from 12 to 3. I'll tell you the story. So back in December, when I started talking to the folks in the NFL that I know, and the name that kept popping up was Mac Jones. And not only that, I've heard from a couple teams that they considered him a top 10 pick at the time, back in December. So it wasn't like – and it was a surprise to me, and I would say that on CBS Sports and write about it, and people looked at me like I was crazy, and yet here we are. So it's not just a couple teams that like Mac Jones. It ends up there's a lot of teams like him. And is he going three? I'm not sure, but it certainly feels that way. And, you know, we talk about Kyle Shanahan and what fits his system. And it's a lot of guys that play like Mac Jones. And Mac Jones is incredibly smart. He's certainly not the athlete, doesn't have the arm strength of the other quarterbacks in this first round. But I think also what that tells us is that the 49ers may, if Mac Jones is their guy, they may have been concerned that the Falcons wanted Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Falcons now are looking to trade down from four tells us that maybe they did too. Like they're not hanging around for what could be, you know, Justin Fields or Trey Lance if that's what ends up happening with the top three. Also tells me that the Panthers may have wanted Mac Jones. Matt Rhule, the coach of the Panthers, was coaching Mac Jones at the Senior Bowl. He was on that staff, so he saw him up close and personal. And then once the dominoes started to fall with the 49ers, the Panthers went out and got Sam Darnold. So I think it leans that way. I'm not 100% sure it's going to be Mac Jones. It could very well be Justin Fields, and that would be a fantastic pick. But it just feels that way based on what I've heard and then based on the subsequent reporting we've seen from other folks about how they're linking the 49ers to Mac Jones. Is it surprising? Absolutely. Is it a ton to give up? Yeah, it is for any quarterback. So now Mac Jones is going to have to face the pressure, if it's in fact him, of having to win knowing that the 49ers sold the farm to get him.
Yeah, and that was sort of what was the thought process going into that is like, man, every mock draft I've seen has him behind the other four, you know, talking about Lawrence and Wilson and Lance and Fields, and then it was Mac Jones. And I'm thinking, you had to trade up to all the way to three to get him? That seemed a big reach, but as Dave pointed out, listen, if the guy turns into a stud and takes you to a Super Bowl, then it was worth it. And maybe they got word, as you said, another team was interested in him. Where are you at with Fields and Trey Lance? Because Lance is a guy who's got very little experience. What did he play, one game last year? He seems like a flavor of the month. People are really hot on him, and then maybe he's starting to lose some of that steam. And Fields plays for Ohio State. They just don't have a great, rich history of quarterbacks succeeding in the NFL that played at Ohio State for some reason. Is he the guy to sort of break that trend in your mind?
Yeah, so one thing to remember, and we sort of fall into this trap as media and fans in our social media bubble, NFL teams don't necessarily agree with everything that we see and read on social media. So they've been high on Mac Jones for a while. Now, the Justin Fields-Trey Lance dynamic is an interesting one. I like Justin Fields a lot. In fact, I have Justin Fields and Mac Jones ranked very closely. I have Mac Jones a little higher just based on I like him a little more, and he's been more consistent. But Justin Fields has a chance to be absolutely special. And if he ends up going number three to San Francisco, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me. I know some teams were interested in him perhaps coming back for a year to see what that would look like. Because in the reality, he's only played a year and a half of college football. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Ohio State connection means anything. He was fantastic in 2019. He was really good in 2020. He had a couple of games where you went, okay, what's going on here? But you know what? If you look at Trevor Lawrence and his sophomore season, he started off glacially slow, like to the point where we were worried about, okay, what's going on here? And then he rebounded his footing, and then he finished strong, and then he had a great 2020. And I feel like Justin Fields would be that same guy if we just gave him a little more time. Trey Lance, as you point out, played one game in over 400 days. He's played 17 games in his career, and they're all FCS. And that's a legit concern. Now, he does a lot of things well that you want to see sort of today's quote-unquote NFL quarterback do, but he hasn't played against the competition. He played in a run-heavy offense. He averaged 16 passes a game where Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones and Zach Wilson threw closer to 30, and that's a huge disparity there. And they were throwing against guys who were obviously much better than the FCS competition. So the concern is you have to project what Trey Lance is going to become. And it's easy for us in the media and the fans to do that because our jobs are on the line. But if you're a guy who's going in as a general manager who could get fired next year, like Ryan Pace is a great example at 19 with the Bears, does he want to trade up after what happened with Mitch Trubisky and what happened with Nick Foles, and now he signed Andy Dalton? Do you want to trade up on Trey Lance knowing that this absolutely has to work and has to work quickly? And that's the fear. Can Trey Lance be good? Absolutely. I think he can be really good, but I just don't know enough about him against really good players to make that determination from here. I feel much more comfortable doing it with the other players, including Justin Fields, because the Ohio State thing doesn't concern me at all.
Yeah. Ryan, you do a fantastic job, man. Really good talking to you. I wanted to ask you about, I think we heard this from John Clayton. How many guys that you have in the first couple of rounds did not play football last year?
Oh, there are a lot. And so Penei Sewell is where it starts, the Oregon left tackle. Jamar Chase, those are two guys. Micah Parsons is another. Those are three guys. NFL teams do not care that they didn't play last year based on their football playing skills. Wow. Caleb Farley, the cornerback, as well. They don't care about those guys. Caleb Farley just had a back procedure that some NFL teams are concerned about. That's his second one. And there's some off-field maturity issues I've heard with Micah Parsons. That doesn't mean he's going to fall out of the first round, but just that maybe he slips a few spots or something. But on the field, those guys no one cares about. Greg Rousseau is the guy, the edge rusher out of Miami, that he opted out. He had 15.5 sacks in 2019. People wanted to see him play because he's a converted wide receiver, hasn't played a ton of football at that position, and there was some interest in seeing him play. You know, you understand why he didn't do it for whatever his personal reasons are. But what happened was Jalen Phillips, who took over his number at the U, had a breakout season. Now Jalen Phillips is ranked a little higher in terms of edge rusher, first-round pick status than Greg Rousseau. That doesn't mean Rousseau can't be great and all that. It's just that sometimes you want to see more of these guys against better competition. So there are some guys at the top that NFL teams are, they're like, fine, he didn't play, he's not going to get hurt. And then there's some other guys, like the Greg Rousseau's of the world, that whose chain positions or haven't been there very long, and you want to get more looks at him, you just haven't been able to do that. And that's something you have to project when you go into to draft weekend, trying to figure out where you're going to put these guys in your draft board.
You brought up the fact that Atlanta's open to trading out of that number four spot. But if they, let's say they just don't get the offer they want and they end up picking there, it feels like quarterback would be the spot based on what Matt Ryan is owed coming up, where he's at in his career. But you guys have them going with a tight end, going with Kyle Pitts. What do you think the reality is there? Because if you just listen to the analysts, oh, they need O-line help. They need a quarterback to be the next guy. Would that be a stunning pick if they stayed there and took a tight end?
I don't think it'd be stunning because Kyle Pitts is that good. But you're right. It's down to three positions in my mind, and I haven't talked to anyone in the league about this specifically. But it feels like offensive line, the Penei Sewell, that's someone you could consider there, and you can move some of the offensive linemen around. You drafted the first round 2 years ago, kick somebody inside or figure that out. Offensive line, Kyle Pitts, the tight end, or quarterback. The thing with Matt Ryan, you sort of touched on this, is he has about 2 years left on his deal in terms of them having to pay him. I think you can cut him June 1st starting next year, and the cap will be $25 million both next year and the year after. And that's something that's manageable, quote-unquote. But if the new GM and the new coach feel like Matt Ryan's their guy, and if they're looking to trade down, that certainly sounds like it is, then they may be looking to go elsewhere. And I think Pitts and Penei Sewell, they say at four, would probably be the first two picks. That said, Justin Fields would be hard to pass up on if you are sold on the idea that this quarterback class is better than next year's, and right now it is, and that Matt Ryan only has a few more years left. Because as I just mentioned, Justin Fields a year from now could very easily be Trevor Lawrence in terms of how we're talking about him. And if you can be patient, and once again, teams that are on the clock in terms of guys, coaches and GMs getting fired aren't very patient with these young players sometimes. If you can be patient with Justin Fields, I think the dividends could pay them, you know, be paying you for the next 10, 15 years in terms of the franchise quarterback you found.
Ryan, in 2009, the Seahawks, with the fourth pick in the first round, picked Aaron Curry. 2 years later, with the 154th pick in the fifth round, they picked Richard Sherman. What's more, amazing to you? A first rounder that's just a total bust, or a guy that gets picked like late, or, you know, Doug Baldwin was an undrafted free agent. I mean, what is more mind blowing to you? I'm always have a hard time figuring out. I think for me, it's the Aaron Currys of the world that everybody thought he was going to be able to play. But how about you?
Yeah, you know, that's a great. I think the Aaron Curry one might be more surprising because, to your point, everyone thought, okay, this makes too much sense not to happen. Right. But this happens every 4 or 5 or 6 years. It feels like this a top 10, top 15 guy just doesn't work out, and there's no real explanation why. And I think it underscores the notion that this is more art than science, no matter how many people and eyeballs you have looking at players, no matter how much you try to introduce analytics to it. It's hard to predict how good these players are going to be from going from one level to the next. Aaron Curry played at Wake Forest. Wake Forest, you know, ACC isn't known for putting out great players compared to the SEC or the Big Ten, for example. They do have their fair share of them, of course, but it's just one of those weird things. I think the Richard Sherman thing is more impressive because the Seahawks were able to find that diamond in the rough that no one else believed in. Richard Sherman played a little wide receiver at Stanford, I believe. He didn't have a great 40 time, if I recall correctly. Yeah. The scouting report was that he was a little stiff in his movements. And now, you know, he's been one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL over the last decade. It's just one of those things that sometimes players, you undervalue how much players believe in themselves. And it doesn't always show up in college. And we forget that 21-year-olds aren't finished products. Sometimes they need time to grow into that role. And when you give them that time, and by the way,
give them NFL coaching, hey, there's something, there's a great idea.
Yeah.
They can become really good players. So I think it is a marvel, the whole entire process, how you hit on some guys early, you miss on some early, and then you find these diamonds in the rough late that, you know, no one saw coming.
Hey, where are you at with Zach Wilson? He's a guy that was really impressive in watching his workouts and everything. People have talked about his lack of competition. And then Rex Ryan bringing up the fact that he's not a team captain as a bit of a red flag. So I don't. Do you put anything into that? Are you sold on him being the real deal? Where are you at with Zach Wilson?
I was talking to the team exactly about that team captain stuff, and they said we don't care. And what they said was that if teams like Zach Wilson before whatever Rex Ryan said, he said it, they're going to like him after. So that has no real bearing on it. And I say this all the time: if the draft were held February 15th instead of April 29th. We wouldn't have time to come up with all these reasons why to not to like players. In terms of Zach Wilson, 2020, he was fantastic. Out of this world, fantastic. And you mentioned the competition, and that's something you do here. But here's the other thing. Like, I was a huge Jordan Love guy at Utah State last year, and he played virtually the same schedule as Zach Wilson, except he was terrible. He had an absolutely atrocious 2019, and he was a first-round pick. Zach Wilson probably doesn't have quite the tools that Jordan Love does, but he was certainly more consistent, more accurate, just as good an arm, maybe slightly better. The issue is that he's small. He's 6'2", and I've talked to teams that are concerned about his durability. He was injured in 2019, and some teams aren't worried about it. Some teams are. And here's the thing: you hear comparisons to Aaron Rodgers. I don't think he's Aaron Rodgers. That seems like a stretch to me. He reminds me more, and I mean this in the best, most positive way, of the best versions of Baker Mayfield and Johnny Manziel coming out of college. That's what he reminds me of when I watch him play. Turn some of this gunslinger type mentality. He's a better athlete than both those guys, certainly better than Baker, and Baker's not a bad athlete and has a really good arm. But I'm not convinced he's going to be a home run, because we just talked about Aaron Curry. I mean, these guys, there's no such thing as a slam dunk. He could be really good, or he could be Sam Darnold 2.0, and the Jets just sort of gave this new Sam Darnold a longer contract. So this is the beauty of it. We'll find out shortly, but I think he had a fantastic season, and he deserves to be a top five pick, and it looks like he's going to go number two.
Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports has been our guest here. Hey, Ryan, really, really interesting stuff. Well, we appreciate you taking the time, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you again before the draft gets underway.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
There you go. Ryan Wilson joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Man, knows his stuff. Dialed in on all these guys. Really well done. You can read his stuff, cbssports.com. His latest mock draft, I think, was, 4 days ago, I think, is what was going on with that. So, going through there, taking a look. Well, he's got Mac Jones number 3, and he's got the Seahawks taking a defensive lineman with their second round pick. Sounds like he could switch that. He didn't seem married to that one though.
Yeah.
Sounded like he was just putting it out there right now, and you know, it could be by the time the draft comes, it could be a cornerback or something along those lines. But good stuff from him coming up. We're gonna hear from a promising new addition to the Seahawks defensive line. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. We've got the Professor John Clayton joining us at the top of the hour, so get ready for that. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, we've got Mean Text, so you still have a few hours to send in your hurtful, hateful things that you send to us. 710-710 is the text number. As far as Seahawks go, though, a new addition to this defensive line has been making his way around talking to people at a press conference yesterday. He was on with Jake and Stacy today talking about Kerry Hyder. Was a guy that I think it's safe to say fairly unknown, even though the 49ers are a division rival. He's not a name you'd focus on the way you would a Bosa, the way you would Fred Warner, the way you would some of the other more high-profile names on that team. Yet you look at them in a year where they desperately needed somebody to fill in or fill the shoes when Bosa's out and the injuries they sustained. He comes up with 8.5 sacks and signs what appears to be, according to John Clayton, a really favorable deal with the Seattle Seahawks. Here he is talking about saying he always heard great things about the Seahawks organization.
Really just, you know, throughout my time in the league, you always hear rumbles about different organizations and their culture and stuff like that. Always been kind of drawn to the organization. And when I had the opportunity, I just, you know, I kind of jumped on it. And I was just really excited that it was, you know, presented to me.
I hadn't really heard of him other than you know, I'm getting ready for the radio broadcast. I'm like, okay, Kerry Hyder Jr., let's check him out. I mean, it's kind of interesting, his career. I mean, he started out 14-15, only played in one game. And then in 2016 in Detroit, he only started in two games, but he played in 16 games, got 8 sacks. Then the next year in Detroit, 1 sack in 7 games, and then 16 games the next year in Dallas, only 1. But then last year, because of all the injuries down in San Francisco, they had him listed as a right defensive end, but, you know, he ends up getting 8.5 sacks, career high. And you got him for a pretty good deal. Because remember, first, John cleared this up yesterday. I think he said 2 years, 6 or 6.5.
Yeah, and there could be voidable years on there or something, which, again, is the is the go-to statement and move these days, voidable.
We hear that more than single high safety from the year before. But, I mean, that all of a sudden, you know, looks like a pretty good deal because originally I think it was 3 over 16 or I don't know. It was more anyway.
Yeah.
And so, it's one of those where I think a lot of people still think that this is a prove it type of deal. Like we got to see what he does. Was that just it's kind of a strange career when you look at his starts and, you know, his production and everything.
Another season with 8 sacks in it, you figure this is a guy that's going to attract a lot of people, get a lot of attention. He's going to start. He's going to be your guy or at least one of the guys in a strong rotation somewhere. And it feels like he's had a hard time establishing himself as a main guy in a rotation of defensive ends. And when he does get that opportunity, just looking at the stats, he seems to prove himself. And he's going to have opportunity here because you don't have – the lead dog, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You don't have that main extra meeting guy, as you've talked about. You've got a group. It's a committee. You got Carlos Dunlap, who I guess would be as close to the man as you've got on this roster. Who knows what Daryl Taylor's going to be. But the rest are guys that are part of the rotation, Rasheem Green and L.J. Collier, if he's still going to be, maybe they bump him inside. We'll see. But it's more of a rotation. So it seems like he's really got an opportunity here to do something and establish himself even more so.
Yeah, and they got 9 defensive ends listed as defensive ends. I mean, these guys will play
really
all over the field. Yeah, you go from Carlos Dunlap to Rasheem Green to and Brandon Jackson is still on the list. So I should say 8. Kerry Hyder Jr., Benson Mayoa, Demontre Moore, Alton Robinson, Daryl Taylor. But, I would compare it to – or I'll ask you, how comfortable are you compared to, like, corner? So corner, it's kind of the same
type
of thing.
I feel much better about their pass rush than I do their cornerback situation.
Yeah, because of Dunlap.
Yeah, because of Dunlap and because of Mayoa, he's a proven commodity. Again, not making the claim that he's an all-pro, but he's a productive guy when he's healthy. So you like Dunlap when he's healthy. You like Mayoa when he's healthy. Taylor, we've got no idea. He could be a superstar or a complete bust or something in between. We're all going to find out at the same time.
Well, and I'd say Alton Robinson, too. Even though he had 4 sacks his rookie year on very limited reps.
Yeah.
It's still coming off his rookie year. It's still like a prove-it deal. I'm excited about it, though. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. Like I said, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable at certain position groups because every year, whether you remember it or not, a guy will develop out of and it's all about the Seahawks process, how they do it, how they bring guys along, how they screen. Now, they're not 100%. Obviously, we talked about, Malik McDowell, those kinds of things. Gary Jennings doesn't always work out, but they do a pretty good job.
Well, which are you more comfortable? To me, it's not even close. That's a slam dunk answer for me. I feel much better about their pass rush than I do their cornerback situation.
Yeah, I don't think it's a slam dunk. I mean, I think you have some good players at corner and, you know, I don't know. Dunlap is getting on in his years.
Certainly. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for that reason. But, no, I feel better about the pass rush than I do about the corner position.
One more from Kerry Hyder. Talking about he's coming in as a defensive end, as we were just talking about. But says they can play him wherever they want to play him. He's happy with that.
They're gonna try to use me the best way they can, you know, whether that's inside, outside, you know. I kind of always been a defensive lineman that kind of gets in where he fits in, you know. So if they need me inside, I'm sure I can jump inside. If I got to play outside, I'll play outside. But I'm definitely coming in as a defensive end, and, you know, that's I plan on spending majority of my time.
Gets in where he fits in.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a good attitude.
Well, he does have that ability. I mean, you and I looked at some tape on him that, you know, where he's jumping over guys.
Yeah.
He's got the bull rush. Kind of remind me of Carlos Dunlap a little bit. Just his game is fairly similar, but it looks like he's one of those guys that if you move him down inside, he's going to use his quickness.
Could he be like Bennett?
Yeah.
Like
that's
Michael
what I was
Bennett?
Thinking. You know, remember in the Super Bowl, he was played D-tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had Cliff
and Clemens, right?
And Clemens on the outside. So, yeah, they used to move him down kind of like a speed package. So, yeah, I believe you can. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys all shake out because, you know, you mentioned Benson Mayoa too. I love the way that guy plays.
Yeah.
He is such a hustler. And then, you know, Rasheem Green, I know he doesn't really blow anybody's skirt up or anything. I think he was a fourth rounder.
Third, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a guy like that is probably going to get you 3, 4, 5 sacks, you know, and, you know, maybe surprise you. But, I mean, he's just a good, solid rotation guy on your D-line. Hopefully he can stay healthy.
Hey, if you haven't downloaded the 710 app, you should do that because, A, it's free. And B, it's really convenient. You take it with you wherever you go. Have us with you live. If you want to listen to us live, you can take us with you there, or you can listen to podcasts. You can text in. You can watch videos. Whatever you want to do, you can do from the app. And again, it's free. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. So check that out. All the cool kids have it right now. Coming up, it is Friday, which means it's time to say, why, man? It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Man, why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We do it every week. We find something somebody said somewhere that just forces you to go, why? Come on. Why, man? Why would you say that?
I know which one's going to really get on your nerves here.
You do?
Yes, I do. Anything that has to do with the Houston Astros.
Yeah. Pretty much it. That's a giant button for me.
Very I have a why, easy. Man. Why is Dave always trying to spoil ahead?
Why, man? Why?
I read it in order. Here.
He's got
to go bottom to top.
The sense of anticipation gets
I didn't
to him.
Say, I said it was about the Houston Astros. It's probably a good thing. We don't even know. It could be Jose Altuve, my favorite player.
Saying, you know what? We did it, and we deserve every bit of wrath you're giving us. We'll save that one. We'll start with this one. Bart Scott talking about Carlos Dunlap, and I guess saying on some level he undermined Russell Wilson.
He's trying to get respect put on his name. He's trying to get more influence. He's trying to be able to control what the roster looks like and what he needs to be around him, which they haven't given him that respect. So by you saying that, oh, he's going to be here, makes him seem like he's bluffing. He's playing a game of chicken. He's trying not to blink. But this guy's going to say, hey, no, he told me he good. Like, come on, man.
Why, man? Why?
Did he blow his whole game? Did he undermine him?
Well, I mean, I think that's ridiculous to put it that way, but I do think that it's very, like, innocently done by Carlos Dunlap that, like, yeah, I mean, he pretty much confirmed that Russ is going to be here and the whole thing's a big ruse put on by his attorney, but I don't think he did it in an undermining way.
No.
You know, but I mean, I think Bart Scott's probably overthinking it.
I think he is, too. I mean, that would imply that the Seahawks were behind closed doors going, man, you want out of here? What are we going to do? Well, all right, I guess we have to trade him. He's unhappy here. I mean, I think they have a pretty clear idea of what's happening. I don't think Carlos Dunlap broke news where John and Pete were going, hey, did you hear what he said? Russ wants to stay. He's this whole thing. He's mm-hmm. just been messing around. It's just a bluff on his part. I don't buy that.
I think it's really funny, though, that it was kind of innocently done by him.
Yeah.
And what's Russ going to say? I mean, is he going to say, well, I don't know, man. But I think it's really funny that Carlos Dunlap, you know, sort of did expose the whole thing. That, yeah, Russ isn't serious. This whole thing was a joke from the very beginning.
Just kidding.
That could have been like, if he'd have said that, he's like, oh, no, man. Russ and I had a good laugh over it. You know, he was never going to be traded anywhere. He was never going to quit the team or anything like that. Yeah, that's really funny. I think I love Carlos Dunlap even more now.
Yeah, yeah. And Bart Scott, I like Bart Scott. I hadn't even considered. I understand what he's saying. And on some level, you go, eh, maybe Maybe that's a fair point, but I just don't believe that would, again, imply that the Seahawks were somehow on the other side believing, hey, this is imminent, he wants out, and now this is news to them. Like, oh, he doesn't really want out. He's just, it's a bluff.
It's pretty funny, though, because the more you think about it, the more it is. Like, look at it from Russell's position now. I mean, you were trying to really act like that was the case. You really were, and now you're kind of being called.
Maybe he did break some news for him. I don't know. I feel like they know. I do. Maybe I'm overestimating what they actually do or don't know about Russell and his desire to stay or leave. Cut number two comes courtesy of Chris Sims, who's becoming a regular participant on this segment, along with Dan Orlovsky. Here he is talking about Teddy Bridgewater being an option for the Seahawks.
Hey, the other team, too, just because I know we both got this on our radar still, is we'll see what happens with Seattle. I just know there's a lot of people in the NFL and league circles that do not think that story's done yet. And if they decide to trade him, maybe that becomes a place where Carolina has some conversations with Seattle and they get something done and Teddy goes up there. And, hey, he would fit that style of football, you know, as far as Pete Carroll, want to run the ball, play through the defense, manage the game, do those type of stuff. I mean, that certainly would fit Seattle style.
Those type of stuff.
Why, man? Why?
He's not getting traded.
I feel like it's a dead horse that he's desperately trying to resuscitate.
Yeah.
And it just, okay, how are we going to fill this segment right here? Let's go back to the Russell Wilson thing and say that there's still a chance. Yeah. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater as a backup quarterback? Yeah, sure. If he's willing to take a huge pay cut.
Yeah, I mean, he was a backup in New Orleans. He's done it before. If he wants to come here as a backup, I'm here with open arms. Yeah. Absolutely. But as a replacement for Russell, I don't think so. I don't see that.
I would rather draft somebody and tear it down for a couple of years than bring in like a Teddy Bridgewater. I love Teddy Bridgewater, by the way. And, you know, again, I always feel bad for guys like this that get those kinds of injuries. I had a similar injury, although mine wasn't compound. I mean, here he is at practice.
His was a non-contact.
Yeah, it was. And somehow his knee dislocates so much that it breaks through the skin. And this is in practice. And this guy was starting to get really good. He really was taking the next step. So I feel bad for him. But yeah, if you had to go that route, I mean, I'd rather just rip the Band-Aid off and start over. And
yeah. If you're bringing in Bridgewater, you're getting rid of Wilson, then trade Bobby, trade any high price, get Jamal Adams out. Let's rip it down to the studs and start over.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to win with all due respect to Teddy. And he's not getting traded. You know, what's funny, as much as it's been a conversation, which could make it feel more realistic, if he were actually traded, wouldn't that be absolutely stunning? As much as we've talked about it, I would be absolutely blown away. It's the least likely thing, in my opinion, to happen. It's not going to happen.
As far as the Seahawks go?
Yeah, just a move they made. Just all of a sudden we wake up, hey, Russell Wilson's been traded to whatever team. As much as it's been discussed, I would be floored, absolutely floored if it happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing just got even, you know, it was just created in the brains of Mark Rogers and Russell Wilson. Well, I like to think that Russ just kind of went along with it.
Yeah, I'd like him to stop going along with that. That'd be good. All right, here we go. Cut number three. This is one Wyman was really excited about. This is Dusty Baker, who, again, I love Dusty Baker. Great, great baseball mind. Good guy. He's been a great manager. Here he is talking about the situation with the Astros and them taking heat from the fans. And he says, hey, think about the kids.
You know, I think that, you know, sometimes we need to look at ourselves before you, you know, spew hate on somebody else. Like I said, it's a sad, you know, situation for America, to me. You know, when you hear things, I mean, what are the kids supposed to think in the stands? Or, you know, and some of them are kids, they're following their parents. And it's sad to me. Like I said, you know, people make mistakes. And, you know, we paid for ours, and, you know, we say leave it alone.
Ah, oh, Dusty.
Why, man? Why?
So disappointing, Dave, because I like him so much.
I hear that.
And had they gone through a season of it, and now we're starting the second season, then I could get on board. Like, okay, I get it. You heard it for 81 road games last year. All right. Everybody got it out of their system, and now they're starting again. At what point do you let it go? I would be on board. You didn't pay a price whatsoever. Not one single player on that team paid the price. Not a dollar in fines, not a day of suspension, nothing. And you still have the trophy. No price has been paid. Oh, and on top of that, you were not subjected to the ire of visiting fans last year or road fans because there were no fans, and it was a 60-game season. So the whole we paid the price, when does it stop, think about the kids. I think it's a great teaching moment for the kids.
See, Mike, I told you. Think about the kids, though, Dave. To me, the biggest crime is that part. When you enlist children for, you know, something to sway opinion, or certainly like anything political. I think there was something about a chewing tobacco ban, and they marched these kids up there, and they're like, what am I supposed to think when I see my heroes chewing tobacco? I mean, just like, oh, that's the cheapest move.
Yeah.
And so for Dusty Baker to do that, I get it. He's trying to protect his team.
And he wasn't even part of this.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
He's been brought in to sort of right the ship.
That'd be funny if he was. By the way, I wasn't part of this whole thing. But I do want to defend my guys.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that he wants to stand up for his guys. As a manager, and if I were a player on that team, I'm sure I'd appreciate it. But I think he's got to choose his words more carefully. When he's talking about we paid the price, that to me is just going to rile people up more that are already angry with the Astros, and hearing him saying, hey, enough is enough. And think about the children in the stands. And no, kids, this is the price you pay when you cheat and you get caught. This is what happens. Pay attention to what people are saying to these people.
Yeah,
you're doing
the kids a favor.
Yeah, you're teaching them a life lesson that'll be valuable throughout the rest of their life. All right, we got the professor coming up next. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, text him in right now. 710-710 is the text line. He's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.